Here we go.
This is episode 5 of Captain Says, and I'm here with...
Okay, by Nightchild.
I was trying to think, because I had it up on the screen before, is it like Ethereal Nightchild, or is it Nightchild Ethereal?
I'll go by the Nightchild, that's fine.
The Nightchild. Now, you, very similar to what Peach and Blake podcasts do, is review Prince stuff, songs. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you do albums in general, or you do just songs?
Well, it's quite weird. I said I was like the kind of gateway drug. I want to get people interested at the beginning, but I've actually... My initial idea was to start off and review, you know, albums, songs, but basically anything that comes up in the Prince world, so I could kind of do it quite quickly. So, you know, something happened, I could do it a few days later. Mm. And I thought, okay, I'll start doing these things and I'll get, you know, I'll do all the albums and I'll do other things. And then I realized I got to like 45, 50 videos. I thought, I haven't actually done an album yet, which is quite random. I mean, the closest I've got so far is the Cream maxi single. It's quite bizarre.
Oh, like the... which has one of my favorite songs of all time on there.
Yes, indeed.
Do Your Dance, Casey's remix. Yes. It's one of the best things he's ever recorded. I don't know why. I know there's better songs, technically, musically, but I just love that track. I don't know why. It's just so good.
At several points, I think I mentioned in the review that when you... In that maxi single, you get to the point where the songs have almost, like, Cream's become almost a distant memory. You know, it just moves away so far. And I love that way he does that with maxi singles, where you start off with an idea, and by the time you get to the end, you've got songs which are almost, like you say, standalone songs. They're almost, you know, almost unconnected. You've got a few lyrics, but I do love that single. There's some songs on there that I really love that, like you say, I find it difficult to sort of say to people, like, oh, this is great. And they're like, yeah. Like I even like the Ethereal mix, which is obviously.
Is that where you got your name from?
That is where I got. And the weirdest thing about this, I said this in a review, that the weirdest thing is that there is nothing to this song, really. I mean, there's really nothing. It's like electric.
Yeah, that one. There's not much. Those last two, like Q in Doubt and Ethereal Mix, there's not much to those.
I mean, there's nothing happened. There's the odd bit of kind of like background sort of moody sort of strings and stuff. But there's nothing really to it. There's nothing. And yet, you say to people, and they're like, well, why that? And I go, I don't know. It just has a weird feeling. And yet, like I say, you can't defend it. It's like one of those things you like, but if you try and explain to someone else, they just look at you thinking, really? Really? That's the one? That's what you like?
Out of all the songs he's recorded, that's the one.
It's just one of those things that I kind of like as my guilty secret. But then everybody's different.
I should mention, for the people who are listening to this show and are not that interested in Prince, this probably isn't going to be the episode for you. Because that's probably going to be the majority of what we're going to talk about.
We apologize now in advance. We should put a public service announcement. This program may contain strobe lights and excessive Prince talk.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of Prince talk, I think.
Oh, it's just it's quite a bizarre. I mean, I was there's some discussion. I think it was on Facebook or something about there's this guy yesterday. He was sort of talking about Around the World in a Day and how much he just couldn't stand it, absolutely couldn't stand it.
What?
And then these people sort of pardon. And I couldn't understand. He said, "Oh, I don't know why he did this. This was a step back." Because I've always seen it as this kind of like really, I don't know, like ballsy move that he thought, you know, I've got this fame, this unbelievable fame, but I'm going to do something different. And for me, that's not that Prince wasn't an artist before, but this is the moment where he said, you know, my art is more important than, you know, the commercial success. Because he could have tried to do Purple Rain too. And do you know what? The public would have gone, yeah, that's fantastic.
He could have easily done that and made a load of cash, but would he have been artistically satisfied? Probably not.
That's the thing. And I think, you know, it's one of those things you can do short term, you can do, I'll do Purple Rain 2, but then when you get to Purple Rain 3, people are like, this is great, but, you know, we've seen this. And I think that's the thing with Prince every year, with something different, the look, the idea. And I think, it took some guts to do that, and I think I like that, like with Dirty Mind, when he sort of, you know, he's three albums in with Warner Brothers and he sort of says, yeah, I'm going to give you this album, and it sounds like demos. You can't play Sister on the radio, you can't play Head, you can't play this, you can't play that. Those are songs you can't release, and like, here's this song, you know, you've got sort of all sex and incest and stuff, and I just love seeing Warner Brothers' face. They go, what do we do with this? How do we...
Sexy MF is going to be the single, we can't actually play it, so... Great.
I love that. Especially on UK radio, because they just, you know, every time they change it, they're sort of...
Different edits, yeah.
Yeah, they got the DJ to cut in every time he swore and sort of just put something else, say something else, you know. And, oh, it just... we've got a mother care shop, like, which is like kid's clothes and stuff. And he goes, "She's sexy mother care." And it just, oh, it was... I think the one I bought, actually, they just replaced the swear bits with that. You know, that sort of ow, ow. So I went, "Sexy mother, ow."
Yeah, and that was actually an official edit. That is the official... Because
yeah.
I actually bought the Symbol album that I had. One was uncensored, but then there was another one which had, I think I'm remembering this right, or it might have been the single. But yeah, that was the officially released edit.
I know in the UK they actually released it, the album as two separate versions, as a censored version and a kind of, you know, and the uncensored version, I think, remember at the time was sort of selling 3-1. More people were buying the, because you want to have it as, you know, he intended it. I remember that time, that was the moment, I think my mum, I was about, God, I was only a teenager, my mum thought I'd gone mad because there was these sexy MF video. And I said, oh, it's a sexy MF video, fantastic. And it was like £8.99, which I don't know how much that is, but it's just, and she goes, right. And she turned around, she goes, this is 9 minutes long. I go, yeah, it's 9 minutes. She goes, it's 9 minutes. And I said, yeah, and
you know, the bad thing. £1 a minute.
And the mad thing of that, the first minute or two was like, you know, those adverts like Diamond Has Legs,
yeah.
You know, Carmen Electra's new album. Buy this. And I thought, and she's like, really? And I thought, no, this is fair. And the weird thing was, of course, then within a few months, he'd released the Three Chains of Gold video. So kind of you got like, you know, the whole album for like $8.99.
Yeah.
I was like, I thought, but I have to buy it. I was like, I got to that point with, I think it was it Somebody? I think it was. And he released like 3 or 4 different variations of singles. And you're buying them thinking, I do have that, but, you know, I really should buy it. That's the time we need to seek help.
That's the thing. That's with Prince. It just seems to attract these people who want to collect everything.
It's so true.
And like, there's people who collect stamps and coins. And, you know, those people... You know you'll never collect every stamp, you know, or every coin. But for some reason, Prince just attracts those collecting people, and they're just hardcore. They will buy every CD, every vinyl, every cassette. There's still people on eBay finding, you know, like the Thieves in the Temple cassette single, just for the sake of having the complete collection of everything ever officially released. And I'm like, okay. I've got a few of those. I can sell those because I, at one point, was that person, which now I just don't want them anymore because I'm never going to listen to them.
It's bizarre because you start hoarding and you start getting to the point where you think, even the Baltimore song, it's quite interesting because a lot of people online said, oh yeah, I've heard it, I like it, but I'm going to buy it because I want to show my support and stuff like that. And I always think these people must be really driven mad by, you know, the song Wally, which Prince did, which he recorded over. They must be thinking, oh, I must be able to get that, but he's deleted it. No, there must be a way.
Yeah.
It must be, if I could just get, it's like, oh, it just, you can't, because like I say, all the live performances and the amount they've done, you just can't, you know, as a collection, you can never finish. It's just...
And as long as he keeps playing shows and people recording them, there's always that as well. And, you know, there's not enough hours in the day.
Oh, there really isn't. And then they say, oh, I recorded this. I go, well, I recorded it from 3 foot closer to the stage. So I think you'll find my recording is much better than your recording.
Mine is 4% better quality.
It's just, you could drive yourself mad. I think you have to kind of, there comes a point when you sort of, you know, you start sort of stocking this stuff and you think, if you worked out how long it would take to listen to it, but then, like I say, a lot of people I've talked to, they actually do, some people listen to every album a year, you know, every year they'll listen to every single album from start to finish. Mm. Like, you know, and you think, wow, it's, must be a kind of weird experience, but. I'm a bit jealous, but
it must be nice to have that much spare time.
I was going to say, I know. Tell me.
I mean, you would need to literally be unemployed and have nothing else to do except wake up in the morning and go, oh, I'm going to listen to this today because I've got nothing else to do.
Oh, my work schedule today? Oh, you've got this album. I mean,
I've got the whole day queued up. I've got 16 albums. That's the whole day booked out. I'm sorry, I can't do anything else. Yeah. That's fine.
That is a full-time job.
It's like your wife's in the hospital having a baby, but I've got 8 more albums to go. You just have to wait. Just take some drugs. That's fine.
There'll be some kind of, you know, qualification, you know. You'll be the official Princeologist and you have I've achieved my 360 hours of listening experience. And it's just,
I would be unqualified at this point. I don't listen to that much at all anymore.
The weird thing, you kind of, I don't know, there comes a point where you just, you have to go away just for a little while and come back because you just sort of have nothing to compare compare it to, you know.
Oh, tell me about, didn't he just, like, re-release the Baltimore track, like, with orchestra or something?
He did, yeah, like a mastered version, apparently. Because there's, like, the tweet, and he said, oh, I'm releasing Baltimore. And then 2 seconds later, he's like, the remastered version. I thought, damn, that is quick. You know? It's almost like he did it in real time. He's like, I've re-released it. You go, wait a minute. But, yeah, it's kind of a high-spec version, which people are quite liking. But I do like this idea of kind of, I don't know, he's making every single concert performance now an event, whereas it's not just like, oh, here's another date on the tour. Because at first, you know, I like that, but then each concert now is like a major event because people don't know if they're going to see another concert, you know, for a day, a week, a month. You just, who knows? You know, who knows what's going to happen? So it's kind of, I don't know, he's making the most out of, and to be fair, he's given away more music probably in the last sort of month than he has for some time. Mm. Especially the live stuff. I never thought I'd sort of be able to go onto SoundCloud or whatever and print it, you know, a live concert and you'd be able to listen. I didn't think that would ever happen legally.
Yeah, I think he's finally gotten to a point where he can just, you know, because the main reason that I always saw that he didn't want to release any live stuff, apart from the One Night Alone live album, which he did, which was edited and compiled from a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
I think his problem always with putting out one show and go, this was the show, now you can buy it, was there might have been some mistakes and he might have thought, you know, the people that were there, that was special for them. If I release it, then it's not special anymore, whatever the reason was. But I think he's finally gotten to the point where he's just like, what we've been saying forever is, not that he's gone that far yet, but you can make money from that. Even though he's just put these up on SoundCloud for free, it's like, I just played a show and now you can listen to it, like the next day.
Exactly.
Which is what we've been asking for so long. Now, if he just goes the next step, he can keep it free, that's fine. But if he just goes one more step and charges, you know, 99 cents a track or 79 cents, whatever it is, that's cash.
That's the thing. Yeah. Like I say, because just having – people would pay for that. There's so many people I've seen who said, oh, I'll pay, you know, like even a monthly thing or whatever. I mean, I know some people have kind of felt burnt because they felt before that, oh, I paid for this lifetime membership and I didn't get this or I didn't get that. Or, but to be fair, a lifetime membership, realistically, I suppose in hindsight, you know, probably isn't going to work. But I just, like I said, just to pay, people would pay for that. And the thing is, he's, you know, one of the greatest live performers of all. So to just to get that out there, because, you know, a lot of people still who even my friends who are kind of, you know, never seen him live, then see him live, think, oh my God, he's amazing. It's like, you know, this is some kind of revelation to them. You think you're just like a few more people to kind of, because he can do that. And that's kind of his USP, that he is just such a great live performer, to be able to get that out there. And to get it out there, like I say, instantly. And you say, because a lot of time, wherever you go in the world, you can't go to the Hit and Run show because A, there's not enough notice, and B, you know, I can't get to Baltimore or, you know, or wherever in like 2 seconds or all probably. So I just to have that experience and say, yeah, you know, I'd like to listen to that. I'd pay for that. And, that's the thing. He has that unique ability that he doesn't need to. I think I said about the Hit and Run shows. He doesn't need to spend loads of money on publicity promotion. He can send a tweet and that's it. He's done it.
The thing is, he records all the shows anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So half the work is doing the actual show. He records it anyway. It's only another, you know, 5 minute step to upload it and then instant cash.
That's the thing. I mean, I think that's one of the key reasons he's so good, that he, you know, looks at every show, looks what he can do better and looks to improve it. But that's one of the, I mean, I remember the London, the 07, the 21 night show. I mean, you know, they were clearly recorded. You could see on the big screens, the camera, and you think, you know, this is all recorded. And yet people sort of don't believe me when I say, oh, there's no, you know, official DVD of that. And they're like, really? Because I can't think of any other artists who do 21 nights, you know, in London and not release, like, for Christmas, the kind of, you know, this is the official DVD. I mean, don't get me wrong, he'd probably take a bit from each night or whatever. I don't know, probably. But I just think, you know, this, you could have made a fortune. And not only you could have made a fortune, but people who had heard about it, you know, perhaps who didn't go, or perhaps in other countries. I mean, that would have been just, you know, a surefire kind of, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, apart from London people or people around England who travel there, and probably Europeans travelled as well, apart from those people, like, very few Australians, very few Americans would have been at those shows.
Absolutely. And they were phenomenal.
Pay, you know, $15 for a DVD. That's fine.
I could always, you know, try and push that, you know, on sort of the extras on the DVD, the odd Indigo show, just, you know, I could always dream. The production of it, having it in the round, obviously, like the Love Sexy tour really worked, but it was just such the atmosphere was fantastic, and Maceo, and I must admit, it was just, they were kind of very populist shows, you know, they were very much about, you know, hits generally, and kind of, but even some of the interpretations, like, I always remember Black Sweat and the bass, but it was just, you know, truly amazing shows, and the, you know, the excitement of kind of, I remember I was buying tickets, and then you think, oh, I can get slightly better tickets. I'll get these. I can get slightly better tickets. And you just end up kind of, you know, obsessed with it. But to be fair, it's like, you know, it's 31.21. I mean, it was like, I mean, 30 quid was a bargain
that's,
price.
That's a bargain, yeah.
And you get your, you know, you get your sort of 15th copy of Planet Earth, and you think, you've got all these, and you think, well, I don't know what to do. Really, if I was a nice, benevolent guy, I really should just sort of like, you know, hand some out free to so, you know, people trying to get their hooks. Sort of like some sort of dealer on street corners go, ah, have you heard Planet Earth? There you go. But I just, you know, I sort of hand them. I've got so many now, I really should. That'll be my next thing.
With him releasing live stuff, it's like, I think we have no idea, but I can only assume, this is my guess, my interpretation, one reason why he doesn't want to put out live stuff is because even he must hear from all the reviews that he loves to keep retweeting on Third Eye Go Twitter. Yeah, he loves tweeting his own reviews.
Baby of a star, I love it.
And, you know, how many of them say, oh, one of the best live performers, you know, the legend, best live show you've ever seen. And it can only lead me to assume that he knows people say that about him. I think he might also know that that doesn't come across that well on a live recording.
I think you're right.
A DVD, possibly better, but just audio. I mean, how many people read, like, the set list for the sampler set and go, oh, seriously, this again? But when you're there, like when you came to Australia in 2012 and sampler set started, and I'm like, oh, here we go. Because I'd read about it. Yeah. And me, Toe Jam, even MC, were like, player, it's like, it's not that bad when you're there. It's a different, you know, atmosphere when you're there and everyone's like dancing like idiots. And it's a totally different, you know, situation than just listening to it on a recording. And it's just different. And I think that might be one reason why he's still putting out live stuff.
I think you're right. I mean, last year, the Here and Run shows in London, he did the samplers. I was really surprised because I must admit, first of all, obviously you've got the atmosphere and the energy of the crowd, but his voice, I must admit, his falsetto, I was quite surprised because I was pretty close and I thought, you know, how good is it? Chilling. It's just amazing. I mean, just he was doing some songs and you think, wow, this is just, you know, absolutely phenomenal. But like you say, you think, does that come across live? And also the excitement if you don't know what's coming. You know, when you're at a show, you don't know, you got the kind of, and every time there's a cheer when someone, you know, the people instantly recognize the song or whatever. And it is a different, I understand what he's saying, because they come out and say, you know, don't film this, don't, you know, take photographs. And it's kind of, I see what you do lose quite a lot. You lose a lot of the smirks and the smiles, the kind of the stagemanship.
Yeah, and that's a big part of his shtick is, you know, the facial expressions. That's half the show, basically. he's such a ham.
Some of the looks, just he can just do a look to Donna or something, and you sort of think there's so much conveyed in that look that you think there's just loads of other things going on. And just,
she knows exactly what that look meant. He didn't even have to say one word.
It was that one time I'm kind of,
it's like, there goes $200 off my pay, damn it.
I owe him 100 now. I was like, oh, yeah. I there was one bit when I think he transposed the lyric or something. Something he sort of slightly kind of got wrong, and he just looked at her like, that's right, I think I got away with that. I was smiling like, I've saved that one. I don't think that'll be bad. That'll be edited out.
But it was just how he's got that whole thing about, you know, finding. I don't know if he still does it, but rumors from the past that he'd find band members for mistakes. And I always thought, I wish someone would apply that to him. Because he makes mistakes. He stuffs up lyrics just like any singer does now and then. But no one's finding him. Unless he's like secretly, every time he does a mistake and he knows, you know, unless he's actually giving $100 to his favorite charity every time that happens, no one's finding him.
He's still flagellating. He's saying, oh, I can't believe I did that.
I suppose the embarrassment enough, that's enough.
I've got to think, when you lose kind of, you know, he's in the middle of like a lyric and you just lose it, and because some shows at the O2, I think there were sort of telereaders at the bottom of the screen, like for those lyrics.
Teleprompter, yeah.
It was fantastic because he actually, you know, the teleprompter was how Prince writes. It was brilliant. It was like, you know, with a 2 and a 4 and a U, and I thought the teleprompter guy going, oh, this is going to take forever. I don't believe this. But I mean, the pressure on that is, I mean, the good thing is, like, so I suppose if you really muck up as Prince, you just quickly go, sort of, you know, quick guitar solo, right? Here we go. Here we go. Oh, yeah. you know, get out of it. But it's quite weird because even the MPG, I think at the time, you always have this image there earning fortune. And they're probably not. I mean, they weren't. I don't think they're getting, you know, huge, vast amounts. You always kind of hear of, I think he looks after, like, you know, obviously the Revolution got a nice I'm getting very financial here, but they got a nice, you know, payoff at the end, because obviously the success they brought. And but you think that's, you know, it's a phenomenally hard job, and you know, you certainly, as mad as it is, you wouldn't do it for the money, because I think, you know, the hours you work, you probably, you know, probably, you know,
the hours you work and the stress.
You have to give up your life, don't you? I mean, basically, you can't. I think there's somebody, I can't remember who it was now, in the Revolution. They were saying that, you know, somebody, if you're kind of married or you've got kids, then, you know, it's just virtually, I mean, long term, it can continue, you know, 2 or 3 years.
That was Michael B. in that documentary that Mo Bean did. He's like, if you're lying in bed at 3 a.m. with your wife watching TV and you get the call, then that's it. You're off to rehearsals.
Which, like, initially is exciting. Then, like you say, but you never know. I mean, you can't ever say,
you'd be like, oh, man, really? Really?
I mean, it's quite amazing. I mean, a lot of people said that about Third Eye Girl. They're surprised because, I mean, it's been, you know, it's a fair while for Prince to sort of stay with one thing and kind of, you know, really build them up. And I don't know, there's half the people I kind of speak to say, oh, you know, they think there's something more to come, another album. They think they kind of, you know, something else to come. And other people are sort of saying, well, they want something else. But it's a fairly, you know, long time for that concept. But I don't know. I'm kind of ambivalent.
They've been around longer than I expected, for sure.
Mm, I just don't know. I mean, but then what do you do? Do you go back to just an MPG with horns, or do you try something complete? But what else? He's done most things. I mean,
Well, to follow the usual plan, it'd be do the band for years and years and do a few albums and then drop it all and go solo again. But he's done that so many times.
That's the thing. I mean,
that's going to happen again.
I just don't know what's left. It's quite interesting. I mean, what do you do? Like I say, everything. I remember when I was a kid, I went to see the new tour, and they said, oh, this is the stripped down Prince. This is just Prince, and this is just... And you look back, and actually, whilst some ways it was simple, there was still quite a lot of, you know, stage goings on, and, you know, there was a few dancers.
I really wish I could have seen, because that was the start of my, you know, my favourite band. It really all started on that tour, and I wish I could have seen that.
I always remember, like, you know, sort of the Electric Man, and it just... Mm. Some of it is very. I kind of like the look. All my friends didn't like the look, but then all my friends. I was alone at my school. I was like the only Prince fan there ever was.
I think with that long straight hair was like the best look he ever had.
I do.
Like Nude Tour got a bit more wavy, but like Batman, like perfectly straight hair, long hair. I thought that was one of the best looks he ever had.
I always remember that. I mean, because that was when I first got into Prince. I was 14. I heard Bat Dance, and that to me just that was just the time. I always associate that with, you know, the kind of moment I really became emotionally invested in. It was quite weird, actually, because I got into Prince, and about a week, I sort of heard Bat Dance, really liked it, and I'd hired, I think, Sign of Times, Under the Cherry Moon. And a week later, one of my mum's friends was a huge Prince fan, and he copied, but, you know, I'll get shot here, but I have bought all the albums since, so before anybody says anything, I'm good, really. But he copied basically every album that he had. So he had, like, from For You to 1989. But because this is, like, before the internet, he gave them to me, but he didn't put any dates on them at all. So he just gave me these, like, albums.
Oh, so you had no idea what came...
I had no idea.
Wow.
I
mean, what an experience that had been. Imagine just having... What? How many albums? What, 10 albums at that point?
10
albums,
And not
having any clue of the order of them, wow.
And it was so weird, because this, you know, nowadays you'd probably just, you know, go and, like, click your fingers and you'd be like, oh, this is it. I mean, I suppose I could have still gone to, I don't know, the library or whatever, I don't know, but I didn't know what to do. So you start trying to put them together in your mind. And the thing is, you have no expectation of each album in connection to each other album. You can't say, oh, well, he's built on this. So, I mean, some things like For You,
that's such a bizarre situation. It's just blown my mind. I can't even imagine being in that situation.
It's like a kind of weird game show where they say, right, put these things in order. And you're like, oh, it's quite weird because, you know, For You and Prince, you think, okay, right, now I can, you know.
Similar,
I can
do
it. Yeah, towards the beginning, I think that. I think I got some of it wrong. I really did. Looking back, it's quite weird looking back at how I put it then and how I put it now, because I put Around the World in a Day before Purple Rain for some reason. I just couldn't quite say it. Parade, I had no concept of a clue. Yeah. I mean, a Parade, I was like, I just couldn't. Parade just seemed just out of. I just couldn't place it. It was just like to one side. I was like, I don't know where this could possibly go. I don't understand.
Yeah.
It just
doesn't fit anywhere.
It doesn't, because I mean, Love Sexy, the sound is quite modern, and you could tell the kind of, you know, the digital input, and it just really kind of. But trying to do that is so difficult. I mean, it just kind of. Son of Times as well was a little bit tricky, and I just, oh, it was just, you know, 1999. I think I put it further up. So it was just a weird thing, and kind of, it's nice in a sense.
Every album is, you know, in your brain is like so hardwired. Like Batman is 1989, and Diamonds and Pearls was 1992. And it's just so hardwired into your... Actually, it was a 91. the tour was 92. But it's like, it's so hardwired in your brain. It's so crazy to think that at one point you had no clue for like the first 10 albums. That's crazy. I can't get over that.
Because people will say to me now, they'll say, well, when did you do this? And I'll go, wait a minute. And I'll think of the album, you know, corresponding to the year.
What album was I listening to when I did that?
I go, when did you go to do this? And I go, wait a minute, that was, right, that was Dumbs and Pearls. That's how it happens. I kind of have to do it in my year. Yeah. And the trouble is, you know, for the last few years when Prince hasn't released an album, you have to kind of tie it to something else. You think, oh, you know, I've got this gap in my life now. This isn't good.
But yeah, anything 2005, you're like, I don't know when. Anytime in the late, 2011, 12, 13, 14, not a clue. I don't know what happened.
Nothing happened. Life was on hold. It was just, it's just bizarre. It's just, it's a great thing because it kind of, I approached all the albums without any expectation of, you know, this is what followed or this is where Prince is at, because I didn't know anything. It was kind of, here's all this music. And the thing that struck me at the time was just how different each album was. You know, just how complete, sort of, there were certain themes, but there's still, you know, radical difference, because I'd listened to people before and they kind of, you could tell it was them, but it was kind of, it was just, you know, a lot of similar themes. Whereas Prince, although there are recurring themes, it was just so different. And it was just, and the weird thing was getting these albums at once, you just suddenly feel it's like Christmas. And you're like, how do you even get to know and appreciate these? And because it takes, you know, if you get into Prince sort of like I did about sort of 10 years in, you kind of, it takes you a few months just to kind of, you know, get a grasp of what you're dealing with. It was quite weird because I feel like, you know, I kind of missed out a bit because obviously Purple Rain, I'd have been about, you know, 9. So I missed out on the whole kind of the point where he was like huge. But then again, in Britain, with the Diamonds and Pearls and the Symbol album, he was still, you know, huge name, and Batman, but he was a huge, huge name. He was really at the height of popularity. So I always think it's interesting when people got into Prince perhaps after the big chart successes, you know, if they got into Prince sort of, I don't know, sort of mid, late 90s onwards or whatever, and he kind of hadn't got that profile. It must be quite a different thing because you see people get into him, I've spoken to him like 18, 19, and you think, and you're like, how did you get into it? Oh, I heard this. And you think, wow, it's just, you know, like Jesse Jenkins. I'm so jealous because, like, when he got into Prince, he had a back catalogue of about 25 albums that he could just go back and look at. And you think, oh, wow, I'm just, you know, I'm jealous. And yet you've got a whole, you know, your life will never be the same now.
And now he lives like 10 minutes from Paisley Park. Anytime there's a show or a rehearsal, he's there.
I can't believe
talk
it.
About being jealous. That's what you're jealous of.
I was unbelievable. He sort of, you get up in the morning and go, oh, I've got a tweet, right? Paisley Park tonight. Okay. I think, oh, can you imagine it? I mean, and not only that, going to Paisley Park, not enough. Seeing Prince, you know, at the place where he's created, all this great music, phenomenal. That's not enough. Oh, $20. Yeah, just rub it in. I mean, don't, it's like you're paying like what it costs to get, like, you know, I don't know, a cut to McDonald's or something. I was like, oh, man. I mean, it's amazing. I can't, just to even think about, you know, all that music coming out, because I couldn't believe that all this music came out of one guy, but you think, and the place where he did it, and to be fair, I'm so jealous. I was just, you know, I sit there thinking, oh, if I was his age, seriously.
That's the thing with Prince not being on YouTube and not on Spotify and whatever, on iTunes, whatever else. Is he on iTunes? I don't know. I don't have iTunes.
I think you're right, because so many people say the biggest problem I have is when you do videos, people say, I want to hear the song. And I say, I'd love to play the song. I said, first of all, you know, I'd get sued and taken down and shot and beaten and buried somewhere. And you know, even if you play, you know, like a clip, like there was that court case where
the dancing baby.
It's like 20, was it 27 seconds or something? Yeah. And that's still, I think that's still rumbling. I've been going on for like half my life. It feels like. And I think it would be so nice just for people to say, oh, I've heard of Prince, but I don't even know about it. I'll type in Prince and then loads of videos. Because I think the only thing you get is the, you know, the Warner Brothers channel where you get the new stuff, like, I think, Another Love and Funk and Roll or whatever. But just to, even a live performance, but just to show them something and they go, oh, okay, cool. I can watch that. And, I mean, a lot of this stuff is already made.
The annoying thing is, though, it's not like he's saving this stuff. Like, he's not putting up the video for Bat Dance because he wants to sell it.
Well, that's the thing. It's not like he's saying, I'm going to do a greatest hits thing.
It's not like you watching it on YouTube is losing him any money because there isn't an option to buy it anyway. That's what I don't get.
This is what I don't get. Because, like, first of all, I mean, you know, you make a little money through advertising. I'm sure there's some deal he could do. But also, this is not being saved up for some kind of, here's the best videos, I'm going to release them next year and go back for all the videos and release them. This is just stuff that's already been made. He's already, you know, was out there. We lose nothing. I know he doesn't like to look back, but also people kind of like to, you know, have this stuff and see this stuff. And Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, even if he says, look, I don't want to be involved, he just says to a guy, look, here's all the videos.
Sort it out.
Make I don't want happen. To be involved.
Make it so.
I don't want to know about it. Just put it on YouTube. I mean, you think he'd be sort of kindly disposed towards YouTube, because YouTube, you know, kind of, without YouTube, Third Eye Girl probably wouldn't exist in the way it does. So, you know, I mean, finding Donna on kind of YouTube, I mean, come on. It's just, you know, this is, you think this is, why not do this? You get loads of views, you get lots of people interested, which then drums up interest in your live shows, drums up interest in
that's
you.
That's the thing. Even putting up stuff, the work's already been done, put it on YouTube, and people will see it. And then that's, yes, that won't literally make you any money, but that will drive people to live shows and buy your new album.
Yeah.
But I don't know if anyone's explained that to him.
I mean, I don't know what the downside is.
It's a pretty simple concept.
It's just bizarre, because every other artist, you can do that, kind of, you know, Madonna, Michael Jackson, whatever. You can just go on there and you can see pretty much anything. And I think, have an official channel, get it all in one place. Do you know what? If you had an official channel and it had everything on it, then I could say, okay, fair enough. If you want to stop everybody else putting your stuff on YouTube, if you're going to put it on yourself and you want it all in your channel,
then fine.
Then I'm totally fine with that. It's yours. You own it. That's great. Fantastic. And let people see it. But I think, you know, he's proud of the work he's done. So I just don't get. And there's things he could put on there which would be exclusive, stuff that he's got that, you know, nobody else knows about.
Mm.
I don't know if it's just part of his psychology that he has to kind of feel that he's kind of constantly moving forward and kind of constantly doing new work. Yeah. And he just doesn't want to consider it. Or
I think it's partly that, and it's partly a control issue. He's got a lot of control issues. Partly him seeing, you know, I'm getting my, you know, this stuff is worth something, but if I put it on YouTube, I'm getting nothing. Because like 2010, when we talked to him, that was, I think that was something we asked him. It's like, why don't you just release stuff?
Just put
it out there. And it's like, well, they're not going to pay me enough. That was basically what he said. And it's like, but if you're making nothing anyway, what difference does it make?
And these things, I don't know. I mean, these things probably depreciate over time, sadly, rather than appreciate. I mean, the longer it goes on, the kind of, I think these things in some ways don't hold the value forever. I mean, they're still, you know, amazing, but so I don't know. It's really strange for me, because they said when Prince, often he'd buy, when he bought warehouses or he bought property, he'd buy them with cash because he didn't want to have a mortgage. He wanted it to be, he owned it. And I wonder if this is some kind of
more control issues.
this sounds like I'm kind of psychologizing, which is terrible. But I was like, you know, from youngster and having an insecurity thing, and you just think, well, you know, I want it to be secure, and I want it, because he's got enough money. He must realize he has enough money to do nothing for the rest of his life, you know, easily 10 times over. And is
well,
it true about that money or not?
That's debatable, because the way he spends money, you know, it's there doesn't seem to be a lot of thought behind it. So I think if he never worked again, his money would be gone in a year.
Oh, you'd have to adjust the way you live. This is the thing, one of the things I really, really love about Prince is that it's pretty much been about the music. There's been the odd thing, but you take most rock stars or pop stars, there's been huge scandals, there's been drugs, there's been sex, there's been criminal charges. But Prince, on the whole, yes, he likes the showbiz side and stuff like that, but he is pretty much, his main thing has always been the music. Because I think somebody said in one of those documentaries, they said, you know, if a rock star had gone out and spent $10 million, you know, taking cocaine or drugs, they'd have gone, ha, yeah, that's a rock star. He's got hookers, he's got drugs, that's what a rock star does. They go, Prince was mad. He spent it on a studio. What was he thinking? What kind of madman spends his money on a studio to record music? What kind of deranged person puts all his money into touring and doing music and having a studio so he can turn up at 3 o'clock in the morning and record stuff? What kind of crazy person does that? And I think, you know, it's just a surreal life. I think my taste said, you know, it'd be 4 o'clock in the morning and you hear the shrieking and yelling of Prince recording some song at 4 o'clock in the morning and everything else is silent and Prince is kind of going, I find that remarkable. At 4 o'clock in the morning, you're kind of doing, you know, some kind of, you know, really erotic or some kind of really searing love song. And it's just a surreal world. But it is always about the music for him. He just kind of, like I say, he spends that on that. I mean, even the hit and run shows, I'm sure he's making money, but not in the sense of how much money he would make if he just sat in one place, like in Vegas, and said, right, I'm sitting here for 3 years, you know. I know he's done a residency, but that's the thing about the 21 nights, in a sense. You know, by not transporting, you can make a lot of money because you just stay in one place,
people
come to you.
That's a big cost-saving thing right there. And that you just reminded me of something else, is I really like the thing that he's doing now of doing two shows a night.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, that's a throwback to, like, you know, Elvis used to do two or three shows a night. You know, everything's set up, you're already there, and they're smaller venues, so you can easily sell out two shows. It's not a problem.
There's a few problems, because I remember we were at Coco's last year, And they would get towards, I was at the first show, he's getting towards the end of the first show, and he sort of come out and say, right, okay, you know, we love everybody, you know, we've got to kind of let all our friends in outside. Should we let them in outside? And everyone's going, no, don't let them in. And they go, yeah, but your friends, you want them to come and enjoy it too, don't you? Go, no. And, he kept kind of coming out, and they wouldn't go. And then eventually, I think the guy who owned the club come out going, you know, we really do have to. And people are like, no. So it's kind of like this thing where he's going, we're not leaving. And it's just like, the strange thing was in that sense that some people said, you know, they would go to shows and they said, oh, the second show, that's going to be the killer one. That's going to be the real, you know, fantastic one. And, yeah. And you kind of have this kind of, I mean, some people obviously try to do both. Because some people, one guy I met, he was queuing for the first show, I think, and he missed the cutoff point by like 4 or 5 people, hardly, you know. Just missed it, so he kind of had a second show. I think in the end he was glad, but at the time you think, oh god, if, you know, should I have been in that kind of, you know? And he just the fanaticism was brilliant, because I mean, in the nicest sense, that people queue up for 6-7 hours, they would put their lives on hold, they go, you know, the amount of people there who said, oh, you know, there were people filming it, like a couple of camera crews, and they said, oh god, if my boss sees this, you know. All these people sort of run, yeah, off, and they were having pizzas delivered. It was great. It was a great atmosphere, but it's just the dedication to, like I say, no publicity. I mean, the total publicity costs couldn't have been more than about 5 quid. You got a couple of tweets and maybe an appearance on, you know, Radio 6 for Third Eye Girl. I mean, there's not many people who can do that. Most people say, I've got to put it in, you know, music magazines, I've got to advertise it, I've got to do this. And people go, Prince, right, we're there, where is it? Okay. And just, oh, yeah, you know, there's very few people who can do
that. You've got to be, you know, unemployed or retired to just, oh yeah, totally. I can go to that. I can line up for 7 hours.
You really have. I was so lucky, because I went, I think one of them I went, and I was due in work the next day, but luckily Prince, when he finished the concert, I think at Shepherd's Bush, and I kind of ran to the, because I live about an hour and a half away from London, I ran there and got the train by about 3 or 4 minutes and got back. I thought, otherwise I'm going to be walking around London the whole night not knowing what to do. I'm just going to be stranded, like just walking about in parks going, I don't know. It's just
gonna, yeah, not much you can do then.
But it was nice to meet kind of, you know, the people in the kind of just to see him in kind of like a small venue, and to see that atmosphere, and just, that was kind of like, that's like, you know, my bucket list. And I was like, oh wow. now it's just Paisley Park. Now if I just kidnap, you know, Jesse Jenkins and just sort of say, right, you know, take me there. Just
see, I mean, I think he does good shows in small venues, but I haven't seen him in a really big venue either, so I don't know what that's like. Like, I mean, Act 2 shows in UK, they were like stadium tours. They were big.
It's a very different show. I remember the tour, was it the, I think the Diamonds, was it the Diamonds and Pearls tour, where he just
brought out, was pretty big, yeah.
And he was being, I always remember that, for some reason, I always remember the Sexy MF car. It's weird how you remember these random things, but I always remember they had this sort of car on stage, and like, he's the Sexy MF. And like I said, they were, you know, big productions. I mean, it's a very different atmosphere. I mean, obviously, it's a lot more, you know, a lot more hits and less intimate, and he's not going to go into a kind of, you know, 20-minute jam. Just, you know, in the middle of it, but it's a very different atmosphere. I mean, in a sense, you kind of, the O2 is a great arena. It's a fantastic arena, but obviously for some people, you're watching the screen more than you can see the stage, obviously, you know, relatively well, but you actually see the, you know, the close up details. You're kind of watching, it depends where you are. I mean, the last time I went a few times, and one of them was so close, I was kind of like, the simple stage was almost above my head. So it's like, kind of, I was sort of like, you know, Prince looked huge. It was bizarre. I was kind of looking up, but it was, everybody sort of, you know, got excited whenever any box was wheeled towards the stage. That Prince is in that box.
He's in
Prince
the
is in there. He's in there. And some people next to him saying, he's been in there for ages. Is he all right? It's like,
yeah, no, that they've forgotten about him. That box has been sitting there for an hour.
It was bizarre.
Is there holes in there for oxygen?
I didn't realize how crazy it was. That just watching them set up, they do the lights and the sound, and these people climb up these kind of long sort of ladders, and they climb up like, yeah, you know, 40, 50 foot above Prince, and you're thinking, wow.
But like spotlights and stuff, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, the mad thing was, at the time I was thinking, if you took a camera up there, then that's a, you know, that's a different angle, you could sell that. That's, you know, but yeah. That's probably in the clause. Don't sell bootleg. That's part of your job description. You shouldn't do that. But
talk about 92, Diamonds and Pearls tour. Did I read correctly that they're going to smash Earl's Court down?
Yes, I think it's...
I just saw that like today, and I'm like, really?
It's either gone or it's going. Yeah, I mean, I love that. Oh, it felt great at the time. It really did. It was an amazing...
Like, I've never been there. I mean, I walk past it. I've never seen a show in there. Actually, just, I have. I saw Paul McCartney there. Like,
really?
In 2003, I saw Paul McCartney there. So I have been there. I've totally forgot.
There was one guy, I don't know why I remember this, they had a sort of a little hole in one of the blackout curtains, and this just bit of stream of light came through, focusing on this guy in the audience, just a guy. And everybody thought, oh, he's famous. This guy's famous. We went, who's that? Who's that? Is that some celebrity? And they thought it was something called a spotlight. And they spent half the time watching him. It was quite bizarre. Oh, it was just amazing. And, you know, it was really good. That was the kind of the big shows. And you had Diamond and Pearl sort of on this bed, which came out over the audience. And kind of Prince and Diamond and Pearl were on the bed kind of coming out over you. And it was, God, yeah, those are the days. Those are the days. The big production. I just wonder if we'll ever see that again. The kind of real big, you know, huge stadium tours, because the thing is, whilst this huge performer, you've got to ramp up these things. Like, even the you know, the O2, you have to build up, you've got to get yourself out there, you've got to get on shows, you've got to kind of perhaps have an album, you've got to kind of push it. And I just don't know if he's interested in that. I mean, as I said, I sound like one of those people. I said, I really can't complain. I mean, like, the amount of stuff, you know, he's produced, the amount of material he's produced, quite frankly, if he'd produced two albums, I couldn't complain. You know, it's not like, you know, it's not like, you know, the amount of stuff he's produced is just, is just phenomenal. So I don't want to be, I sound like one of those people go, oh, God, you know. He hasn't done a concert in my front room this week. I don't know what he's playing at. Really, I really don't. I mean, it's just the sheer amount of variety. I could never understand how, I don't know, how difficult it must be to continue to be creative. I know they all say, oh, you get a peak, you get this, but to continue to be as creative as he is all that time, because to constantly have these ideas. And I think part of it is the way he works, the way he gets the idea, creates the idea, works the idea, just gets it done very quickly and then moves on to the next one. But I think if he held on to these ideas, you start to second guess yourself, or you start to think, oh, should I change that? I'm not sure. I don't know. You know, and I think just by having that speed of working just really allows him to kind of shift through, you know, this material.
As much as we want him to live in the past and re-release old stuff and play random tracks from like 1986 that weren't released, that's not going to happen. But if he was living in the past, I think it'd be a lot harder for him to be creative now if he was still, you know, in that mindset. And that might be part of it. That might be part of his, you know, the way he thinks is, well, if I'm sort of listening to all this 87 stuff now, I might start subconsciously doing 87 stuff now.
But
then you think, what's wrong with that? 87 was great.
Yeah. I think he was always very worried about becoming like a bit of a, like a tribute act, you know, like becoming kind of like an homage to how he used to be.
Oh, a Las Vegas always act, which he actually did.
I think it's kind of weird, but I was at the Brit Awards a few years ago, and I think that summed it up, because he started off with, I think, with Te Amo Corazon, and then did Fury, and then he did, you know, Purple Rain, Let's Go Crazy. And I think because people at the time say, oh, I don't know this new song. And I think, well, if you constantly, if you only did, you know, old songs, people go, oh, it's great. But, you know, he's doing what he did in the 80s. Fantastic, brilliant. Oh, it's a phenomenal performance.
Yeah,
but I think you have to balance the two in the old.
If he only played 80s stuff or early 90s, everyone would be like, oh, he's living in the past. He hasn't written. He hasn't done any albums for years.
That's the thing. I mean, you never know.
Any concert you go to, most artists, not Prince, but because we want to hear the new stuff, but a lot of artists, it's like, oh, here's some songs off our new album, and everyone groans because they just want to hear the old stuff. But
for
Prince fans, it's the opposite. We're like, stop playing Let's Go Crazy. You've played it almost every single tour of your life. Sure, it's a great song, but I want to hear a new song.
It is strange. Like, even last year, people go, Let's Go Crazy Reloaded, is that going to be... I mean, the weird thing was this, the 07 shows, when one night you started with Purple Rain, you thought, okay, right, we'll get that out of the way. You can always tell how much Prince believes in like a project, you know, by how much he plays live and how much he kind of pushes that album. But the strange thing is, for me, is Parade, because at the time, he sort of was a bit critical of Parade. He said, you know, apart from Kiss, there was nothing he was particularly proud of. And he said the temptation was good to get back into studio when you haven't got quite enough material and produce this, and I'm not going to make that same mistake again. And, you know, then he went on to Sign of Times, and obviously it's phenomenal. But it's quite interesting, because I think, A, he said that at the time, and I think he's changed. But I always judge it by, what does he play live? And I think, well, you know, he plays Kiss. He plays sometimes at Snows in April. He's done Mountains, Another Lover. Yeah. And I think, you know, when you look at time, you think his opinion, you know, changed. It's always interesting, because if an album can produce three or four songs that he plays live fairly regularly, then you think, you know, he's got a certain regard for it. But then some projects just seem to, you know, just get lost.
Tell me one song that he plays now from the Symbol album. Which is one of my favourite albums.
Yeah.
He did play Seven for a while, but that was about it.
It's quite weird. I wonder if there's an emotional kind of thing, because some albums get crystallised into like a song, like almost like Dreamer. It's like kind of becomes like once, but I almost think that sometimes emotionally, like with Emancipation work, you know, you just wonder if he just doesn't feel fondly of that time and other things perhaps are going on. He just doesn't seem to, you don't know if it's a comment on the material or is it a comment of where he doesn't really want to kind of constantly, you know, because I suppose people forget that, you know, he's human, these are emotional songs, they still, you know, mean something to him, and he remembers what was happening at the time. And it's rather like, you know, if you were kind of like a, you know, an artist, and they go, oh, play that song from when you know, your girlfriend left you, play that song again. Yeah, I love that song. And you think, oh, I don't really, I don't. I've got to play it again. I feel like, you know, yeah. You get to the point where I suppose you think, but it is weird because that was, I always remember that was interesting because they said, why is he brought out? My name is Prince now. And you're thinking, you know, he's clearly had an idea of what was coming. And thinking, if I don't play this now, I'm not going to play this for some considerable yes. time. So I better get. I remember that. That was so weird. The video as well, with like, you know, and they had like Kirstie Alley sort of outside glam slam. Said, oh, there's terrible scenes. There's fighting. There's a riot going on. We don't know
I
what's
love
happening.
That video.
And she sort of gets shoved out of the way. And she's like, and you're like it's just that kind of, oh, I just love that. Because at the time, I didn't know about all the little segues they cut out. And then when you sort of find them and you think, oh, it's just, oh. The good thing about that was you got a full length video. You know, you got videos for most of the songs. You got a full length thing. You got a kind of a storyline of interesting. Oh, some people said to me, my friends, they go, oh, great, what's this kind of video about? And what's the storyline? And they're like, well, there's these chains, right?
Oh, you shouldn't have even tried. You should have just said, it's a bunch of video clips for the album.
I should have said, you know, it's unpronounceable, like the symbol. You just can't, you know, you just can't do it. And I love it because all the shops called it something different. I think some shops in the UK called it the love symbol. Some said it's an unpronounceable symbol or, you know, the symbol. It's like, oh, it was just, those are great days. It was,
in Australia, there was a radio station here. They had a competition, and I think we said this on some Peach and Black show. Triple J, they had a competition, and they said, okay, Prince has changed his name. It's now this unpronounceable symbol, but we still have to call him something, so let's vote. And everyone voted, and the name that got highest number of votes, Dave. And then, of course, in the Australian way, that got lengthened to Dave-O, and then, of course, Dave-O the Slave-O. It was great. It was just great.
It was bizarre, because even when he went to, like, I think one of the Brit Awards, people were like, I think,
something
blurred. Yeah, they wrote like Dave or something on their face. I can't remember, they wrote something on their face as like kind of mocking him and kind of they're throwing bread at each other. And God, that was brilliant though, because I remember that bit where he turned up the Brit Awards and he sort of said, you know, Prince, best, you know, gold experience, yeah. Better. And he sort of, that moment where he sort of says, you know, in concert, perfectly free, on record, a slave. And he just looks up to where the Warner Brothers delegation is set and he's kind of like stare and everybody's going, what's going on here? It was like one of those moments where sort of people think, oh, I'm in a bit of a domestic. I don't know what to do. It was one of those things, though. Everybody at the time, they didn't know what he was doing. And then in retrospect, they go, oh, yeah, of course he was right. Yeah, of course. Well, we knew that. Obviously, we knew he was fighting for his rights. At the time, though, they didn't.
Yeah, that acceptance speech I really like, because that's the one where he thanks pretty much every band member he ever had and every musical influence that he ever had, which up until then and even since then he has never done. That, if that's the one I'm thinking of.
I think it was one around that time, I'm sure.
It was 95, but it was, yeah, it was one of those, I think it was Brit Awards, and he thanked everyone. You know, everyone by name, like All the Revolution, Love Sexy Band, you know, every band member.
It's amazing because he has his experience, and I think he does. Prince always goes kind of, I don't know, like he sort of treats, you know, band members. But you have this experience together. You have this amazing time, and you do have to sadly move. I mean, A, because of various, you know, internal politics, but you do have to move on with bands just because I think there's that danger, like we said, that if you stay with them too long, the band become the kind of same thing. And like they say, had he stayed with the Revolution. I think he gets a hard press. I must admit, that's one of the things that I know people are constantly saying, oh, about the Revolution, you're thinking, well, it's only been, you know, 30 years, we need to. But the strange thing about it for me is I don't think there was much choice. You had to kind of, you know, like I said, if you threatened at work to leave and you say, well, I'm thinking about leaving, then your boss starts thinking, well, if you did go, what would I, you know, you have to kind of move on at some point. I mean, it's very interesting because he doesn't really pick, I suppose, Sheila E., but he doesn't tend to pick massive, huge stars to, you know, work in his back. I mean, sometimes Maceo and the odd people.
Talking about control issues, you know, you can't let anyone take the focus from you.
I think he likes to create people from almost scratch, doesn't he? Like from ground zero, and say, I'll take this person who's got some talent, but I will mould them how I want them.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key thing. I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, I was thinking the other day because somebody said, oh, they were talking about how he doesn't tend to do kind of duet or collaborative work with big male artists. And again, I think that's the same thing. Sadly, you know, you won't see massive amounts of that collaboration because I think to have two kind of, you know, alpha males, if you like, you know, in a studio when Prince, you know, I think he's used to making a decision. But that's the thing is, though, if I was Prince, I'd be thinking, well, I've trusted my voice this far. It's got me to this stage where I'm a, you know, quadrillionaire. I've won an Oscar. I've won every award. I love that because I think there's some quote where they said, where do you keep, you know, where does Prince keep his awards? And he sort of, one of his spokesmen said, he keeps them in the cupboard marked awards. I thought, oh, as you do. Yeah. And you've got all this success. So I suppose you must think, well, you know, I better trust my internal voice because my internal voice has got me here. And I've had all these accountants or people saying, you should do this, you should do this. You should. I mean, he could have exploited his albums 10 times more than he did. I mean, people always have a go at him.
He could have done promotion. He could have done interviews. He could have gone on all the TV shows and played a song when the album came out.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes he's interested in that. I mean, like, you know, like Diamonds and Pearls and even Musicology. There are times when he clearly wants to be more mainstream and get a lot of publicity and attention. Then there's other times when he just sort of thinks, you know, I'm going to do an internet-only release that only the kind of hardcore fans are going to get. And I love that fact that he could just, you know, he can do that. He's got the pulpit to do that.
Well, he always had that thinking about, you know, that, like, one of the reasons he didn't do interviews was because he says, I don't have anything to say. If people want to get to know me, they can listen to the music. It's all about the music. That's me. But I think he sort of got that a bit mixed up with promotion. You can still go on, like, or not Letterman anymore, or Jay Leno, they're both gone. But you could go on those shows and play a song and still not do an interview.
Oh, absolutely.
And that
yeah.
way the music is still speaking for itself and you don't have to do an interview. But he sort of just didn't do that hardly ever.
You still got that mystery. You like I say, you don't have to sit there and sort of say, oh, you know, what do you feel about this? What about this? You could, and to be fair, even when he gives an interview, like we said, 95% of the time, you come away from it thinking, I'm not entirely sure. You learn the odd nugget of information, but you don't really learn, like, he doesn't sort of lay his heart and they think, oh, I wrote this about my ex-girlfriend. She won't call me and it's terrible.
No,
and
you're
I don't
not going
to
get that.
Do.
Now, most Prince interviews, you usually come out knowing less than when it started.
And even if you know something, you go, oh, pancakes, great. Yeah, I've got a hold on this guy now. Pancakes, damn. Yeah. Because you want to know, you know, what his day's like. And like I said with that interview with the receptionist, like, there's a list of things Prince has given me to do, like, make sure rehearsal's gone on time, contact such and such, fix the drains. And you're thinking, Prince, drains, I can't compute this kind of, I think it was, I can't remember if it was Vanity or Apollonia or somebody said that when you see Prince, even like a kitchen, he's still larger than life. It still doesn't seem right. Like, you know, he's just sort of cooking and thinking, this, you're doing a normal thing. What are you doing? Why are you doing a normal thing? Stop that now. Yeah, and it's just, what are you thinking?
It's
just,
right.
It's just, I mean, the amount of effort, I can't imagine. The other day, somebody had, I was showing off some Prince pictures they had, and you just look at the sheer amount of photographs and photo shoots he's done in his life. And you look at that and you think, that just the sheer time. I mean, obviously his image is, you know, incredibly important and that's part of the whole thing. But you think just the sheer amount of time it takes to do that without writing, you know, God knows how many albums, without practicing for your tour. And then you sit, you know, in the 80s where he could kind of, like, you know, he'd get up and he'd sort of write, okay, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to train Vanity 6 or Apollonia 6. I'm going to train the time. Then I'm going to train my own band. Then I'm going to do the actual concert. Or I remember the 90s, he would say there was one night he did an appearance on Top of the Pops, then he did like the actual concert, then he did the after show, and you just think, where do you you know, it's just it clearly must love it to the extent that, you know, you don't have to do it. And that's the thing about, you know, we're really lucky, because like I say, he could have just be one of those acts we look back on and say, oh, he had a few good albums, but I don't know what do you know what happened to him, do you know what happened to, you know, what happened to him. But it's just, you know, it's just I'm quite lucky, because had I, you know, gone to someone else, I'd probably say, well, I've got both the albums and the two remixes, and I'll finish my collection. Excellent. Yeah. That's it.
Well, you never know. I mean, you can get Michael Jackson, you can get the albums and all the singles, but then you've got the fact that there's no more. That's it.
Yeah, that is it.
But even choosing someone who's still alive, most bands put out an album every 2 or 3 years, you know, who is putting out an album a year?
Yeah,
not,
exactly.
I mean, I'm sure there's some, but it's not the norm.
And like I say, that's alongside all the other stuff he does. I mean, that's what we said was like the big difference between being a musician. It's something he just does, wants to do all the time. And he kind of, unlike an album or singer, where he'll just sort of, you know, write, we'll write the songs, if they write the songs, and we'll wait a bit, we'll go to the studio, record, and then we'll mix them a few months later, and then we'll think about promoting the album. And it's this kind of timetable, and he just has escaped all that and thinking, you know, he could just rip out an album this week and quite frankly give it away. And he's kind of, so he's in a unique position, I think, pretty much.
He can do whatever he wants.
And that is kind of a responsibility and a freedom. I suppose he's free to do what he wants, but it's kind of, I don't know, it's a different situation. Nobody else really has that situation. He just has that absolute uniqueness. It's kind of, I don't know. That is something he's really, you know, worked for in his freedom. Because initially, when he was fighting for his freedom, everybody thought, oh my God, you know, he wants to release millions of albums. And it's, you know, initially, you have Emancipation and stuff like that. Then you thought, oh, we're going to be getting 4 albums a week. This is going to be free, you know, free discs. He's going to start, because he was talking about that time about giving away free music on, you know, free magazines. Yeah. You're going to get a download to your computer. He's going to let you walk around the vault with your mates, and he's going to let you take stuff out, and he probably won't care if you don't bring it back a bit later. Oh, it's going to be phenomenal. And then you sort of, When you said freedom, obviously you meant freedom to do at the rate, and I thought, you know, I mean, that is nice, don't get me wrong, it's good to go when it motivates you, but I think you made a good point about Artificial Age and Plectrum Electrum, because they were such a gap, it almost hurt them in a sense, because people
expectations
were ratcheted up. They were so kind of, you know, up for it, and had that followed fairly quickly after, say, 2010, people would go, oh, this is, you know, I say had it followed as if Prince could just, you know, click his fingers and it just comes, and oh, there we go, there's Artificial Age.
I mean, I didn't mind either of those two albums. I mean, of course they were less than I expected, because I thought after 4 years, man, these albums are going to be great. And they were
every
good.
Track.
They were good. Yeah. And there's always a few tracks you're like, oh, yeah, whatever. But on the whole, they were both good albums. I actually liked the Third Eye Girl more, because I like the rock more than the, you know, Artificial Age was just too many ballads for me, too many slow songs. But
I think the thing I liked about Artificial Age was the fact that it had a real, there was clearly a concept, you know, he clearly kind of done a theme, and I kind of quite liked that version. I think on paper, I would have liked Plectrum Electrum more. I mean, it starts off so well. It's just, you know, it just starts off with wow, and you just, I don't know, they're quite a few interesting songs. I don't know, it's...
I just like the rock more, but the point is, I don't listen to either of them. I haven't listened to either of them from the day they came out.
Yeah.
And I didn't even get them straight away. I didn't get them for a few weeks. And then I probably listened to both of them for maybe 6 weeks, because, you know, we had to view them. So I listened to them a lot for that time, and I've probably haven't listened to them once since.
It's quite interesting, because, like, when you first hear an album, like you say, you don't know how this is going to rank. Because when you first get an album, you're like, oh, you sort of have a different view of it. You kind of have to let it settle in and then compare it. Well, you don't have to compare it, but I mean, will you go back to it? And that's, I think that's quite interesting.
I mean, I will one day.
Yeah, yeah.
One day next year, I'll be like, oh, let's just listen to this for fun. And I'll do it. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, that's okay.
I think it's some good tracks. I think even the Affirmations are kind of weird in the sense that they're quite different to what Prince would normally do. And that's the first album I've ever pre-ordered in my life, which is I just don't ever do. But it was quite weird because I pre-ordered it. And they said, since you've ordered this album, the price has gone down and we will give you the difference. I was like, oh, bargain. It's decreasing in value. Well, the weird thing is, I think they reduced the Plectrum Electrum in price for some reason, but not Artificial Age. But it was quite weird because we were all prepared for Plectrum Electrum, you know, then Artificial Age just
came
popped out.
And
we're like, what the hell, when's he been doing this? I mean, obviously, you know, he can just do that, you know, in his downtime, but I kind of weren't expecting it. So it's kind of,
that was the pleasant surprise, because we knew the Third Eye Girl was coming and everyone was talking about it. And then just before they came out, they're like, oh, and there's a Prince album, by the way.
Like a little tag on, like an extra added bonus. There's a Prince album.
Oh, by the way.
it's just quite weird because I kind of, even Plectrum Electrum, you kind of think, oh, I wonder what Screwdriver will sound like. You're like, no. And you're like, oh, no. It's just, you never know what you're going to get. I wonder if though, however long Prince works on now, but if he worked on now for 10 years, would he still, you know, would he necessarily be the best judge of each song kind of being the maximum, you know, the best choice?
If Prince didn't do an album for 10 years, let me tell you, this is what it'd be. He'd record 3 albums every year, and the album, but he wouldn't release them. The album he released after that 10 years would be the one he recorded 3 weeks ago. It would not be a compilation of the best tracks in the last 10 years. It'll be like, this is the latest thing I've done. It's great. You're going to hear it right now. That's the way it works.
He's just interested in what he's doing now. And he's like, everything else is like, oh, I'm bored of that. He's like, well, you may be bored of it, but we haven't
even heard it.
We don't even know. It's, you know, it's just, cause I think he said that on, was it Rave when it was edited by Prince? And he said, oh, I got Prince to edit this album because, you know, he's such a great editor. And he kind of, it's a kind of weird situation. But, oh, it's just, even then I was kind of, you know, the Rave into a lot of people. Preferred. It was kind of, it's just really, really strange.
Yeah, that was funny because, Rave Unto was edited by, you know, produced by Prince. Obviously, he wasn't that good because he had to re-release it. was Rave Into, was that produced by Cymbal Man? Was that better than the Prince version? No one's ever confirmed
that. It was just bizarre. I remember that whole kind of thing because that was the kind of, almost the false start from Musicology in the sense of, you know, we're going to promote this, we're going to do really well. And then it kind of came the recriminations that, you know, oh, you haven't done enough for me and Clive Davis hasn't done this and he hasn't promoted it and he hasn't pushed it. And then Clive Davis is very much like, well, you know, Prince needs to get out there. And to be fair, I think Prince did get out there quite a bit, but...
He did a fair few shows in Europe for like a week. That was about it. He played The Greatest Romance like on 5 different shows, so what else do you want him to do?
He did some strange TV appearances as well, but yeah,
He played Motherless Child on one of those shows, and it was great.
Oh, the Motherless Child. Oh, yes. Motherless Child, yes.
Don't forget that.
Septimo, that was probably one of the best performances. That's the classic Prince, though, isn't it? One of the greatest performances, I think, you know, fantastic performance. And how many people outside the Prince community have even heard of it or seen
it? Well, it's weird because, like, I'm here to promote this album, so I'm just going to play a cover from a song from, like, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm here to promote this album. You know, it's like when he went on Letterman and Letterman said, the song he's going to play is from this album, which I hear is never going to be released. So what makes perfect sense is here promoting it tonight. It was just, it's great. The way it works is a never ending, you know, amusement to me.
It was just so great at that time being a Prince fan. Cause it's like, oh, you know, he's promoting this album. He loved this album. And they go, oh, when's it out? No. It's not coming out. Don't be stupid. That'd be silly. And that's traditional. We don't think that way. We don't want to do that. That's silly. I just, oh, you remember at the time, because when I first got into Prince, I kind of believed every announcement. I don't know what I was thinking.
Oh, yeah.
You know, at when the hits came out and he said, oh, you know, he's retiring. he's retiring. He's quitting music. He's going to focus on alternative media projects and he's not going to do, you know, music anymore. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. You know, it's terrible. Oh, and then like, you know, suddenly when we said retired, not playing music, what we actually meant was, you know, I should have realized that looking back at, was it after Purple Rain when he sort of, yeah. you know, sometimes it snows in April, I'm off to look for the ladder. And you're like, all right.
And just about every tour, the promoters say, oh, it's the last time you're going to hear the hits. And I'm like, why are you saying that? You can't say that. That's false advertising. Can we sue these promoters? Because I'm sure Prince doesn't tell them that. They just make it up to get people to buy tickets.
I mean, how long has that been going? I mean, I'm trying to think. He's done that so many times. I mean, certainly, you know, at 07. But even before then, it's the very last time you'll hear Purple Rain.
Even.
Yeah, musical, yeah. I mean, it was all
actually,
kind of, you know,
2001 Hit and Run Tour, 2000 Hit and Run Tour. That was, you know, come and hear the hits. Might be the last time.
Like, you'll never hear Let's Go Crazy again. You'll never hear these things. You must get in here now. If you don't get in here now, then it's like one of those, you know, TV adverts. The sale must end. It must end now.
We must end now.
No more sales. There'll never be another sale until, you know, next week.
Guess what? We've run out of time.
Oh, God, yes.
So where can people listen to you talk just like you
they
talked?
They won't want to now. They'll go, what the hell?
I've heard everything he's ever going to say.
That's all there is. If you go onto YouTube and type in, I don't know, Night Shoulder Theory, it'll come up and there'll be me sort of talking crazy things about
it. There'll be you wearing a hat. You always wear a hat, don't you?
I do. It's my thing. It's when I'm the Night Child. When I set the Night Child off, I'm just a normal guy. I can go about my day. But it's kind of, yeah, it's just, they're only a few minutes long, just the kind of little gateway drug. And then, like I say, go to Peach and Black and get the full, you know, the full deep experience.
I'm not much time to waste.
But if you go to YouTube, Night Child Ethereal, I'm on Facebook and Twitter and everywhere else in the world. So, come and say hello and say, you know, and do what somebody did the other day. Go, oh, that English accent drives me spare. Can you stop doing that?
Yeah, stop putting on that accent. We know what you really talk like. That.
Somebody said that to me, and then bless them, they come back and they said, oh, I didn't really mean to see that. I'm sorry. And I you know, there'll be a chat. And I was like, I've made a friend. So I've turned somebody around, and that really made my day. And I thought, because I thought I couldn't do a lot about that. I can't really change my accent.
You could do it in a Scottish accent. You can do that, right?
God, I wish I could. I'd probably, some of my relatives were Scottish. If they heard me, they'd probably hunt me down. They'd go, what was that? That was, I don't know what that was. I'll try a vocoder or something next time, I'll see.
You can do some. And just so this show isn't 100% about Prince, Cameron voted, I can't even think of the words, election, Prime Minister, again, Cameron.
Can you not say you voted like I did it? I'll get in trouble.
What have you done?
Oh, it's bizarre. I love it. All these millions
was
and millions.
Was it close?
We have polls and polls saying it's going to be hung parliament. So the entire campaign was about one thing. Who's going to work with who? You know, what group's going to form a coalition? I'm not going to work with them. I'm not going to work with them. And then they had the exit polls. And they go, yeah, you know what we've been talking about for the last 3 months? It doesn't really matter because Cameron's won. I mean, he's got about, I don't know, 10-11 majority, which is like tight, but no one really expected this. And it was like, it was bizarre. It was going, oh, it's going to be really exciting. And they go, we don't, you know, this is an uncharted territory and we need to know what these other people think. And then Cameron go, I've just won. And it was like the most boring election ever. It's 5 more years. Oh, don't.
Oh, well.
The depression alone.
At least he's slightly better than the idiot we've got here.
I was just going to say, maybe I should move to Australia, so obviously not then.
No, I do like the London mayor. He's hilarious.
What's his name, Boris?
Is it Boris?
Boris Johnson.
Hilarious, that guy. Every time I see him on the news saying some stupid thing, and I'm just like, oh, here we go. Why can't I live in this comedy town of London? It's good.
Because everybody either thinks, A, that he's like, you know, made up, or they think that all English people are like this. They think, I knocked into the thing, and oh, it was terrible. And the Eiffel Tower. He says this thing. The thing is, he's Teflon. He's actually a genius, because whatever scandal is involved in, they just go, yeah, but it's Boris. And they go, oh, so he can get away with it. I mean, he's become an MP. He's the MP now, and he's the Mayor of London, and he's got like a columnist, and they reckon he'll be tipped for next Prime Minister. So watch this space.
God. If he is the next Prime Minister, I'm moving to England. That will be the best thing ever.
He's just become an MP, and David Cameron said he'll stand down before the end of his term. So he is next in line, pretty much. So it's quite bizarre. People think he's made up.
He's a fictional character.
There's nothing he can do to lose his job, because whatever scandal he's involved in, they just go, oh, but it's Boris, come on.
Look at him. Look at his face.
We built something for the Olympics, some dome, and he said, and if we've lovingly rubbed this dome with rhubarb, and the rhubarb makes it stronger, and you think, oh, you just can't make it up. You couldn't make it up. You couldn't write someone like that, you know? He even looks mad, doesn't he? He even looks mad.
His hair is just all over the place.
It's just scary.
Well, you can put it this way. He's not wasting taxpayers' money on a hairstylist, is he? He's looking out for you.
You must look at Cameron and you must look at Boris and think, everybody in Britain is so posh. We all went to the same school. Dear. Oh, I feel such a commoner now.
Well, it was very good to talk to you.
And you. It's a real pleasure.
This is the end.
Thank you very much. I'm such a fan. I really appreciate talking to you. If you just told me I'd talk to you a few months ago, I'd have just laughed my head off and not believed it. So.
Okay. All done.
That's fantastic. Cheers, mate.
Theme music. Yay.
One, two, three, four.